Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Handling the Heat, the podcast by restaurantequipment.bid, where we dive into the real stories behind the people powering the food service industry. Today, we're joined by Maya Geshwin, brand director at TSC Hospitality. TSC Hospitality is the team behind Mise en Onde and other affiliated restaurants operating in one of the world's most competitive food scenes, London. Maya shares her unique journey from teenage prep cook in LA to strategy lead for a global hospitality brand. We talk about learning the business from the ground up and how she brings both empathy and precision to her work after years of living every role inside a restaurant. From stuffing rabbits at age 15 to navigating cash flow meetings and cultural differences in international operations, Maya's got range and lessons to match. If you've ever wondered what it looks like to blend strategic leadership with genuine kitchen grit, this is one you won't want to miss. Maya, thank you so much for joining us on Handling the Heat. Super excited to chat with you about your journey and your experience working at the Sababa Company.
Thanks so much for having me, Zach. Super excited to be here.
So the first question we ask everybody before we get started is, what's something you've eaten recently that's really tickled your fancy?
Our hummus. Honestly, it's the best hummus ever. That's how we list it on the menu.
The best hummus ever is how it's...
It's literally called the best hummus ever. And I think it's one of those things where people see that and they're skeptical and they'll be like, okay, well, I'm really the judge of that because I've had a lot of hummus in my day. You know, the same with best bagel or whatever. And I think it truly is the best hummus I've ever had. So
what makes it the best hummus?
Quality of ingredients. I think you taste the love and the care that goes into it. I know that's so cheesy to say, but you know, it's everything from we're not buying canned chickpeas, we're buying dried chickpeas, we're soaking them, you know, it's a whole process. And you really, the creaminess comes out in that. It's delicious. It's creamy. We do a little squeeze of tomato on top. So you get some acidity. It's really nice.
Yeah, that sounds good. I could go for some of that right now. However, let's jump into a bit of your past, Maya, because I think of all the people that I've talked to here on the podcast and of all the people that I work with on a day-to-day basis, you have a pretty interesting path to where you are today, particularly as it pertains to actually being an operator and like making that jump to more of managerial strategy kind of work. So can you talk a little bit about your upbringing in LA and how you first kind of found food and working in restaurants and working as a cook and kind of working your way up prior to, you know, going off to university?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think I was just a little bit of a weird kid, to be honest. I have no idea how I wanted to, how I even knew what a chef was. Both my parents were doctors and scientists. And, you know, I think I must have seen a chef somewhere and thought it sounded cool without actually knowing what it meant. And for as long as I can remember, that's what I would always say I wanted to be when I grew up. And it went through phases of that and maybe own a vineyard, which obviously coming from an 8 or 10 year old is so incredibly pretentious. My parents are probably like, creative, but you know, I didn't of course really understand what any of that actually meant. So I think, you know, fast forward after, you know, childhood camps and baking camps and cooking birthday parties and that kind of stuff. You know, when I was 15, I sort of decided to take the jump. And I wanted to get a job. I was a very independent and stubborn child. So I went to the local cheese shop down our road, Andrew's Cheese Shop in Santa Monica, which is a delightful cheese shop, and started speaking with the woman behind the counter who happened to be married to the maitre d' at a famous LA sort of institution restaurant called Luke, which unfortunately has now closed, but it was running for over 20 years, which is pretty incredible. So I was asking for a job essentially at this cheese shop, or that was my initial intention. I love cheese. I love all things French. I was a little bit of a Francophile. I love Julia Child, all things kind of food and the hospitality in that sense. And, you know, I walked out with a phone number of the maitre d' of this restaurant. And so I called the maitre d' and I sort of explained to him who I was and what I wanted to do. And he said, well, you know, why are you speaking to me? You should speak to the chef. So then I was passed another phone number and I spoke to the chef, Javier. And Javier said, okay, well, come on in for an interview and let's have a discussion. Here I am, little 15-year-old Maya, nervous beyond belief, almost to the point of tears because I'm about to go like have a conversation with a real chef in a fancy restaurant. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. And I have a conversation with him. And what came up during the conversation is I had actually been pescatarian for 7 years prior to between the ages of 8 and 15. Why that came up during my interview with Javier was because it expanded the way that I had to eat, that I had to cook, what I had to take into account because my mom was concerned. I played a lot of sports. Are you getting enough protein? Do you have enough energy? Of course, my mom would also say, we're not having to make two meals for dinner. So if you don't want what we're serving, you have to make it yourself and all sure. this kind of stuff. And so in a way, it was really by limiting my dietary sort of choices at that age, I expanded my worldview and horizon in terms of like what spices are, you know, what different cuisines are really great and amenable to vegetarian eating, you know, what's healthy, who's, you know, what is the literature out there on food and the food system and all this kind of stuff.
And that's all from the ages of 8 to 15. So this is all in the lead up to the interview.
This is me looking back and reflecting on it. I don't think at 12 years old, I was thinking, ooh, like what are spices? I should, you know, but I do think that as I've sort of, you know, because over the years I've had many inflection points of how did I get here? What am I doing? What do I want to focus on next? You know, it sort of starts to make sense because when you look at someone with my background and you go, cook, Yale University, tech, what the heck is she doing eating hummus and working as a GM at a restaurant sure. sometime, right? Or maybe that's just my own, you know, perception of myself. But I think it's also quintessentially part of the industry is rolling your sleeves up and doing a lot of different things. So anyways, I'll come on to that later. But yes, so this interview, Javier says, you know, what's a girl like you doing here? You're at a private school in L.A. You know, Michael Kors is down the street or, you know, whatever, Marc Jacobs or, you know, right by Melrose. What are you doing here wanting to work in the back of the kitchen? And he basically said, look, I'll give you a job, but you have to treat it like a job. If you do not show up, like you're done kind of thing. You have to be on time. You know, we're going to depend on you for prep and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, here I am 15, can't even drive myself to the interview. And I'm like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So I took the challenge and worked as a stage every weekend from 15 till I was almost 16 and a half, 17. So for about a year and a half. And, you know, that was everything from Friday nights to Sunday supper, doing prep like stuffing rabbits and killing lobsters and all of that kind of stuff, which I was challenged to do as a result of the whole kitchen learning I was vegetarian. So I was given these, hey, here's this, you know, 15-year-old girl. Let's see how tough she is. Make her kill the lobsters. Let's have her stuff, which actually is quite a cool thing to be able to do, again, in hindsight.
I was going to say, not pulling the leaves off coriander or whatever. Yeah.
You do a lot of, by the way.
No, I'm sure.
But like was learning more technical things because of the challenge, right? And because I was almost being given this sort of sink or swim opportunity of, okay, you say you can hang. Let's see if you can actually hang. And I'm not saying that I could hang. In fact, I ended up at one point, I remember, this is what I wrote my college admission essay on, chopping off part of my finger, fainting in the middle of the kitchen, getting blacking out, almost hitting my head on a refrigerator. And then basically waking up in the office on a chair with one of the guys holding my hand up like this and him offering me an Asian pear to like get my blood sugar up. And I just have such a distinct memory of that. Anyways, sorry if I'm jumping all over, but that was such a formative experience for me, I think, being in both an amazing restaurant in Southern California where it was super produce driven, where, you know, you were working with all the farmers directly and they were, you know, bringing you what was in season. And, you know, you had a Sunday supper menu, which was, I think, more of that time. Like that was quite a cool thing to have.
I think the thing that I'm taking away from this is from a very early age, you knew exactly what you wanted to do. And you had the gall to go out and just do it, which I think from a lot of the people that we talk to is a consistent through line, like to whether it be naive or whatever, like you feel 100%. Like
by the way.
Like, this is something like you have to do. And yeah. whether that's you as an 8-year-old in summer camp who says, hey, I'm vegetarian now, which I also played that game too, but it was because the vegetarian meals were made individually at the summer camp that I went to versus the rest of it. So it was like my little scheme to try out, you know, some what I thought were higher quality kind of things. But so you go, you do that, you go out to the cheese shop, you say, hey, this is something I know I want to do. I've been telling people I want my vineyard, I want my restaurant, I want to be a chef. And then you go out and get the job. And I think the fact that, or even all the way up through like killing lobsters, right? Like as a 16-year-old girl who, you know, I think that for sure is out of the ordinary in terms of the stereotypical 16-year-old girl from Santa Monica, what they were doing at the time too. But it all kind of comes from this like level of naive, yes, but excitement about what the next step is, and so much excitement that like it overrides any kind of nerves or whatever around taking that next step, which I think is pretty cool. And also I think kind of flows through with what you're saying also about your journey. And I think I do this too. And I think a lot of people also do this as well, which is you create your story retrospectively, right? As well, cause like there's so many inflection points, as you said, that can lead to, you know, what's the next step, but the next step is the step that you took. So that then gets built out into your story. And I think that's super cool, especially as like your story starting so much earlier than most at, you know, 8 years old, 15 years old, working in kitchens and things like that. What then after your stage was your continuation of your culinary experience? Were you working in other restaurants around LA prior to university? What was the...
Yeah, so I it's interesting. I got to a point where I actually needed to make money over the summer, as you do as a teenager. And I will say, actually, it's not that uncommon in restaurants and in the industry that people do start quite young. Whether they fell into it or whether they intentionally went after it, you know, is a question. But I do think that it's so funny because where I am now and I look at myself, I'm 29, I feel behind, even though by most senses of the world, I'm probably not. But in the industry, because of the hours required, you have to be constantly pushing. And, it's difficult to do as you get older. So anyways, I decided if I was going to open up a restaurant at some point in my life, I needed to know how to do every single role in the restaurant and do it better than everyone there, or at least be able to muddle through. So I did what probably most 17-year-old girls would do at that time, and I decided, okay, let's give front of house a go. So I got a job as a host and then server at a restaurant called Back on the Beach Cafe in Santa Monica, and learned a lot. Again, each of these jobs was, I think, so formative in that I've learned from, you know, a James Beard award-winning chef who's also a badass and a female sort of leader who would be in her restaurant on a Saturday night despite having run it for 15 years already successfully, which I think was important for me to see at that age. Moving over to, you know, a beach cafe that's all about volume and had 2-hour waits on the weekend and, you know, large family parties and that kind of thing. And so, again, sort of not being aware of this at the time, but looking back on it, it really showed me another side of, you know, hospitality in the industry, which is, A, dealing with guests, turning tables and what that means in all senses of the experience, and what a crazy large restaurant operation can look like. And that's not even that, it wasn't even that large, but compared to the other restaurant that I worked at, I was.
Sure. In terms of total volume, people grabbing sandwiches versus people sitting down for a full meal is a totally different experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. And running front of house too for something like that must be very difficult as a 17-year-old trying to, you know, herd everybody to their table and herd them out when you got to get the next table in.
Well, it was very demanding because it was one of the only restaurants that had seating on the beach where they could serve alcohol in Santa Monica. I think it actually still might be one of the only ones other than like the, you know, I won't say anything bad about the Perry's Beach cafes, but like they don't really serve food. I'm going to actually be a bridesmaid in one of my other hosts with me at that time's wedding in September. So it just goes to show like the family and the people that you meet and you build along the way, and hospitality really kind of become that because of the trenches that you end up sort of working in together. I mean,
the shared experience of lunch rush on a Saturday.
Yeah, I wish I had sort of actually kept a journal and documented, but I mean, the amount of times you would have someone slamming their hands on the table or being, rude and disrespectful, but also the amazing moments that you get to make for people, surprising them with the birthday treat or, whatever, as cheesy as it sounds, like so many people would be so awestruck coming to the restaurant because of how unique the setting was. Where else in the world? There's not that many other places outside of California and the US, at least, that you can kind of have that kind of that experience. So I went front of house, is sort of what followed from that, which again, I wouldn't change it for the world. But I think that it definitely shifted my view of the operations of restaurants and hospitality as a
Sure.
whole.
And so you're seeing both sides of this. You're seeing back of house, you're seeing front of house, you're dealing with the high highs and low lows of both as a pre-university student, young woman. And I think for me in particular, the way that I kind of see it is the people who are like going through it are molded by the fire of it all. I mean, that's the reason why the podcast is called Handling the Heat, is because the people who are able to succeed in those experiences that are difficult and do view them as learning opportunities or do like appreciate the takeaways that they get from it, I think is critical and is a, another through line for a lot of the people in the industry of like, it sucks sometimes, but when you're getting through it with people that you want to get through it with and you're able to kind of get out on the other side and see it for what it was outside of the actual experience. I think that's, very important learning opportunity for, I think, for anybody, to be honest, but it happens, it feels like more frequently within the food service industry for sure, just by way of the fact that it's customer facing and it's tough and, you're killing lobsters in the back and whatever else it may be.
No, 100%. Yeah, it's interesting because I look back at that experience, and again, you kind of hindsight is 2020 and all this kind of stuff.
Sure.
But to your point about handling the heat in the podcast, and you can only, it's a through line. Like truly, in the kitchen, when you're cooking something, controlling the heat and how it's cooking your food is so important. And so it's taking that heat and being like, all right, cool, this is way too high or this is way too low, and how do I
That's
sort of
cool.
To use that analogy further, like actually use it to my advantage. Like that's where that's how you have to look at it
Yeah.
oftentimes.
No, that's great. I feel like the heat is usually talked as like this negative thing, like I'm going through it, but it can be molded to be something so positive, like, a nice saute or,
Exactly.
a good takeaway from, I said Saturday lunch rush before, but let's skip ahead a little bit, Maya, because you have had so many experiences in and around the food service industry. And I think one of the things the what you're doing now with the Sababa company is super interesting, especially because it is such a brand that's known across the world and in such a, dare I say, difficult city as London to operate in and to bring a brand into. Talk to me a little bit about your journey into the Sababa company and kind of what you're doing now, straddling the line between operator and, more kind of not even back of house, but back of house in the office sometimes working with caterers and things like that.
Sure. So I found my way. So we actually call ourselves TSC Hospitality, stands for the Sababa Company, but TSC Hospitality. And look, I think it was very fortuitous. I had been at a company called Reef Technology, which is what brought me over to London, doing a lot of restaurant franchising and expansion in dark kitchens or ghost kitchens, as a lot of people know them. And, my passion really lied in the quality of food and hospitality, as I had sort of started out with. And I had then been to the Nomad Hotel and a few other places. And I think that in the world of franchising and expansion at that scale, particularly in dark kitchens, there's a phrase that I heard not so long ago that really resonated with me, is you can sometimes taste the spreadsheet. I felt like, when I was on these partner calls saying, how do we optimize the supply chain? Let's make things as efficient as possible. It was also at odds with my philosophy about food and the way that I like to enjoy and serve food, and experience in hospitality, right? So you know, I won't name names, but bringing another fast food burger to closer to someone's doorstep is great in a lot of ways because you're giving the consumer what they want at a given time and fulfilling a need, if that's what, you know, what they so desire. But it wasn't what I wanted to, what my story to be. You know, I had been looking for a number of other roles, and the way that hospitality works in the UK is very different than in LA. And I felt, you know, when you grow up in a certain place and you start building your career in a certain place, you not only build a network, but you also have a sense of the way things work, from getting an alcohol license for a restaurant to signing a lease to hiring people and HR laws. All of these things that encompass what hospitality and restaurants are, but are the things you don't necessarily see or talk about because they're not the sexy, fun part of the industry, right?
Right.
And so I knew I would have a big, big learning curve to basically be now in this new market, having been in more tech expansion, spreadsheety sides of restaurants and franchising. And I wanted to get back into what I loved doing, which is speaking with customers, cooking food, serving food, and having that interaction with high quality ingredients and you know, a chef philosophy that I aligned with. So it took a while. I was searching quite a bit within the UK. I had a number of obstacles also because I'm sponsored, so I don't think that that helped anything. You know, I was put in touch with a family. And again, who would have thought that going to Yale was something that would actually help me in hospitality, if anything? When I was starting out, and I think the world has shifted slightly, but like when I was starting out, it was almost like, okay, well, prove yourself. You think you're some big hot shot, like, let's see where Yale gets you in the kitchen kind of thing, right?
Sure. It's the same experience as, oh, you're a vegetarian, go kill that lobster back
there. Exactly. Yeah. And so... A friend of mine's mother was put in touch with or was getting lunch with one of the owners of this group. And they knew I was in London and looking for something else and mentioned me, and sort of one thing led to another. And I ended up having a conversation with the MD last August. And it was really just positioned as, hey, I heard you might be in the restaurant space looking for your next role as a restaurant manager, was the email that I got. To which I was like, yeah, absolutely. Always happy to have a chat. Like, let's get a coffee. And the coffee chat sort of, it quickly and clearly became, oh, we should work together. Not only because I think that my skill set is uniquely suited to actually do a little bit of everything, which at this moment in the industry, everyone needs to do. I think that culturally, at least in the UK, I've noticed that people tend to like to have their box, their job description, and stay in that job description. And that's quite culturally like how it is. But I think particularly in hospitality globally, you need to have a roll your hands up kind of attitude. And that, yes, you might be sous chef today, but if the KP, the kitchen porter, calls out, you might be the kitchen porter tomorrow, right? And as, you know, again, as cheesy as it sounds, or as cliche, or, you know, trite, you know, those things are, it's the reality. And so I think putting your ego aside and saying, okay, here's what I can do. Here's what I'm good at. And then also being honest about that. Look, I don't have 100%. Like if we were in California, I could say I can do your hiring. I can do your HR, you know, all this kind of stuff. But there is a skill set. There is going to be a learning curve for me because I'm happy to do it. And my attitude is I will do it and I will muddle my way through. But you have to be willing to take the chance on me making mistakes as I'm doing that, which again is sort of how I've learned and how I've gotten my sort of degree in hospitality is just by doing it and having people who will take a chance because.
There's a lot of similarities, I feel like, in the way that you're describing your culinary experience with people who are entrepreneurial and go out and like start a company and the ability to roll up your sleeves and no job is too small and let me make sure that everything runs as it needs to run and tastes how it needs to taste and whatever else. And I think that, you know, mentality is what separates out the successful people in, you know, the hospitality space from the people who are not as successful. And I think honestly, it's applicable across the board too, because if you're not willing to, you know, roll your sleeves up and get something done, you're kind of just like pigeonholing yourself to be whatever you are and waiting for that kind of opportunity to come around. And I think what I love about your story, Maya, is like you're seeing something, even if the opportunity is not exactly apparent in front of you, and you're putting your neck out there. And if it hits, it hits. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But when it does hit, it is good. And it gives you that kind of step up opportunity, to use the like MBA kind of terminology, to, you know, get to where you ultimately want to go and to do the things that you ultimately want to do.
100%. And I mean, yeah, it's whether it's an entrepreneurial attitude or, you know, I think it's also just making sure that you're staying humble every step of the way. Like, just because you know how to run one restaurant, like you might know how to do a fried chicken restaurant really well. That means nothing when you're looking at another kind of restaurant. And it's so funny because I do that there's a lot of industries, and I think that's what makes hospitality and restaurants so beautiful, is because even within that, you have such varied experience and you have such varied ways of working and doing things. And while every experience builds on and helps you with the next thing, it's not like being a doctor, you know, a surgeon or something, where it's like, okay, I've learned these skills. I know how to operate and do these procedures, and I will now go do it henceforth. And I'm sure many surgeons who will also say, actually, it's much more nuanced than that, and there's a lot of art to it. And yes, I'm not saying that there isn't, you know, according to my MD PhD, just kidding. But I do think that there is expertise in every single variation of a restaurant.
Yeah.
And so I mean, that's all. I think that's just what makes it so beautiful, is like, that's how your experience, that's why there's so many restaurants, however many there are in the world, you know?
What do you think, I guess, of the varied experiences? The experience that you're having right now, I think, is unique, because there are very few people that have both the boots on the ground opportunity and background, and also the kind of 30,000 foot view and opportunity and day-to-day tasks as well. What would you say, in terms of your specific experience, is your biggest challenge that you're working through right now?
Oh boy. That's a good question. You know, I think with anything, the biggest challenge is always figuring out where to spend your time. Like, there's never going to be enough hours in the day. And how do you prioritize? Because again, there's no day where the answer is ever the same. So one day, if your chef is having a terrible time and someone's walked out on them and they're a man down, and maybe the most important thing for you to do is to take them for a drink that night. And, you know, screw the financial model that you promised to someone the next day. And similarly, because at every level in the business, there's different things that need to get done, right? It's this little wheel, and it's a watch almost, right? You have all these little gears that are working and then making the whole thing run. And when one of them isn't working properly, it really has a knock-on effect. And so oftentimes it's just trying to find a way to make it so that the watch can keep moving and working, even if it's not optimal. Right? It's okay. We are so short staffed. We are like six people down, but like, we need to be open this weekend. So how are we going to do it? Right. And I think it's just figuring out what those things are always. That's what you have to be doing. And I'd love to be in a place, and I hope that we're in a place, and there are days where we are, where it's not as reactive. But I think that just the nature of the beast at the moment, with, you know, the margins and post COVID and all this kind of stuff, is such that you have to be reactive and nimble and flexible, and sort of be like, okay, cool. Well, I've just been hit in the face with this thing, whatever it is, the chef walking out, and I need to solve it. And it's just every day figuring out what that problem is, solving that problem, and then being ready to do it again. Yeah.
So it sounds like stick-to-itiveness, you know, a genuine, I think, interest in the space is something that's interesting. But both of those things and, you know, many others, I think, are applicable to getting in and staying in the industry and being successful. What advice would you give, Maya, to somebody who is interested in either, you know, starting up their first job as a stage or as a, you know, cook at a restaurant or front of house at a restaurant operationally, or, you know, is interested in working in maybe a more corporate environment in the hospitality space. Is there like any specific advice you think that's substantial and helpful for somebody who is going into hospitality?
My most valuable experience always has been and will be working in restaurants. So I think even if you want something corporate, even if you know that you're not cut out for, or maybe not cut out, but you don't want to long-term be operational, you need to be able to do it because you will earn your stripes that way. And I also think that when I, like today, I told you, I started this call saying I was on a 4-hour meeting about cash flow this morning, right? And that was not a fun way to start my day. To understand what it means to go from a 30% labor to a 29% labor, and how many hours is your skeleton crew, and what threshold of labor you need to hit to then be maximizing sales. It can be quite simple, right? All of this, if you break it down, can be simple. But to be able to say we can go to 29%, or to back up your thought process of actually, no, we can't. We are at the bare minimum. What other levers do we have to pull? You need to know what that means on the floor. You need to know what that means in the kitchen. You need to know, okay, well, if we have one chef working in the evening and our typical Friday night is 100 delivery orders, let's think about that for a second, right? Who's packing them? What happens if someone else comes in and is dining off the regular menu, right? So it's really just about there's the spreadsheet, right? And this probably, again, applies to every industry, whether it's, you know, manufacturing or what have you. But like knowing the context is so, so, so key. The best experience I will ever have is always working in restaurants, on the floor, in venue, during service, because you are faced with the real problems and are forced to solve them in real time constantly.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it sounds so easy, but I think people don't necessarily like feel like it's maybe as important as, I agree with you. It's like the context and the real world aspects and the empathy that you have from actually living that experience. And you have, you know, a lot of that lived experience now from your career, and it really brings it to life in a way that, you know, it's really easy to dismiss if you're just sitting at a computer all day. So I think, you know,
it's
getting
credibility. It's getting your degree in your field or becoming an expert in that field. It's like sometimes you just have to put in the hours. Like you're not going to get to be a doctor or to get your driver's license if you don't drive a certain number of hours or go to med school, or right? Like you just, it should just sort of be a prerequisite. And I do feel like a lot of people, because restaurants are something and hospitality is something that everyone interacts with, or most people love to interact with, right? It's a fun thing to do. It's a social thing. It's a cultural thing. It's a way that people come together. For a lot of people, it's like, how hard can this be? You know,
pretty damn hard.
Sometimes I honestly wish I could rewind, know absolutely nothing, and just go completely blind into opening a restaurant. Cause at some level it's ignorance is bliss. And like maybe that fresh eyes and that sort of, the ability for me to remove my voice being like, that's not smart, or you know, I know what that's done before, would maybe give me a fresh perspective in a way to do things that hasn't been done before. I mean, you know, so sometimes I'm like, maybe you should just give it a go.
Well, that's what started your journey too. So I think, you know, there's definitely some optimization between the jump right into it and think it through, but ultimately you got to start somewhere. Awesome. Well, Maya, thank you so much for your time. I think your journey, your story is super interesting, and I appreciate you sharing it here with us on Handling the Heat.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me, Zach. Appreciate it.